Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of Indie Street. I am Rachel Galvin, and today I'm going to be interviewing Scott Cardinal, director of The Legend of Ivan Tours, a documentary about an amazing producer who did shows like Doctari, Flipper, Sea Hunt, the list goes on and on. I met Scott at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, where his film was shown. And let's see if we have him on the line. Okay, yeah. Scott, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Everything's awesome, like usual.
Great. Well, tell me what inspired you to do this film about Ivan Tours.
Well, it always bothered me over the course of my lifetime where there were people that were incredibly talented and a major accomplishment, and people didn't know who they never knew who they were. And I started working as a journalist when I was in high school, around 16 or 17 years old. And I was writing under pseudonyms, so nobody would know that I was that young. And anyway, I grew up in New Jersey and New York, where I was born. And a friend of mine had called me, and he said, "Oh, you should meet this, you know, my neighbor. His father is a big time Hollywood, you know, was this big Hollywood producer." So people have always called me and said, "Oh, you need to meet my cousin, my neighbor, the guy who washes my dog." You know, you're used to hearing stuff like that. So I didn't pay too much attention to it, but I did go and visit him not too long after. And he introduced me. I was very young, but he introduced me to a gentleman named Peter Tours, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But at the time, this was an incredible guy. I mean, Peter Tours. I later found out he was Ivan Tours' middle son. But he was exciting and dramatic and theatrical and a million stories. And you can imagine, I mean, the life that this guy led. And I think he was in his mid-30s probably at the time. And one of the things that struck me is I remember seeing an interview with Elton John when I was a kid. And he was talking about John Lennon. And the reason he liked John Lennon so much was because he had never met anyone like John Lennon before who was completely comfortable in every type of environment. John Lennon treated people the same, whether they were poor, you know, dirt poor, or they were rich and famous. John Lennon just didn't care. And Peter Tours struck me as the same exact type of person because he and I became friendly and we started hanging around, and he could pick up the phone and call anybody in Hollywood that he grew up with, that he knew, and he would talk to them in the same way that he would talk to some guy on the street that he just met. Just an amazing, really interesting guy. So we started talking about. He started talking about his dad, and I didn't really know who his dad was. You know, unless you're Steven Spielberg or George Lucas or
right.
And you really promote yourself, most people have no clue who the producers were. And what made it more interesting about his dad is most producers in Hollywood, it's a job, it's a gig, it's a grind. They'll take anything, for the most part, that comes across their desk if they think it'll make money, and then they go into producer mode, you know, hiring people and putting together a budget and, you know, whatever it is, a horror film, you know, whatever comes across. Ivan Tours wasn't like that. Ivan Tours had this built-in compass, this moral compass with ideas that he wanted to do that nobody else was doing, and he had a scientific mind. And he came up with scientific ideas. I mean, amazing stuff. And Sea Hunt, it was him. He wasn't just a producer on Sea Hunt. It was his idea from scratch. And then in the 60s, he was doing the animal shows like Flipper and Gentle Ben and Doctari. And there really had never been a producer like this before. And I had found out that he had more TV shows on the air than any other producer in history. It's just amazing stuff.
Wow.
And that he essentially single-handedly changed the way animals were treated in the entertainment business. Because before Ivan Tours came around, for the most part, they beat up animals or they starved them into submission.
Mm-hmm.
And Ivan Tours came up with this idea of affection training. You know, his idea was, no, let's treat them with love, let's care for them, let's be affectionate. That means more to them than, you know, than food and some treat. And it certainly means a lot more than beating them with a stick. And so Ivan Tours changed the way animals were treated in the entertainment business. And he also single-handedly, I mean, this is amazing stuff, created the South Florida film industry. Before Ivan, I mean, you know, they shot a few things here and there, but there was really no base. There was no foundation where everything was. And I was just, you know, I'm listening to Peter Torres, and I'm listening to some people who also knew Ivan, and I'm thinking, how come people don't know about him? Because even if you forget about the money, the incredible amount of money that Ivan made, it was a very inspirational idea that you could actually do what you love, and you could inspire people, and you could do something incredibly positive with your life. So since I was a journalist, and I was talking to Peter, I said, you know, has anybody ever written a biography on your dad? I mean, it seems crazy. And he said, no. So, you know, so I started doing research. I started looking up some of his shows, and I noticed that he worked, like a lot of people in Hollywood, with a sense of loyalty, and he had a stable of producers and directors and production managers and set designers and writers that he always worked with, going back to the 40s when he was just, you know, just a screenwriter, and then in the early 50s. So I thought, well, let me start off with these people. And then I found out a lot of them, you know, I mean, Ivan was around for a long time. A lot of them, unfortunately, had died. And it was, you know, I thought, God, this is awful. You know, I want to interview people and they're dropping like flies. You know, and death sucks. You know, once you die, you can't interview anybody. So
you just get all these great people in to help you with the project. How did you get some of the celebrities like Larry King and Rance Howard and Clint Howard?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Larry King started his career in Miami. And so he knew Ivan Torres very well. And in a roundabout way, we got in touch with Larry King because we knew a lady who used to be engaged to him. You know, a lot of people, I guess, were engaged to Larry King, but this lady was really fantastic. And so I flew out to L.A., and I interviewed Shelley Winters while she was still alive, obviously, and she was fantastic. And then I interviewed Lloyd Bridges, and then I was set to interview Larry King, and I had to meet him in about an hour or 2 hours, and I called him up, you know, just to make sure we're on schedule, and he said something to me that completely threw me. He said to me, he said, okay, is this going to be on camera? You know, and it never occurred to me on camera. You know, I'm showing up with a tape recorder. And it was just such an interesting, yeah, it was interesting that he would ask that. It was an intelligent question. You know, obviously he'd want to be prepared. And it never even occurred to me. And I thought, you know what, forget about a biography. I mean, a biography is still a great idea. I need to get people on camera. This needs to be a documentary. And so I rescheduled with Larry King. And then I started contacting other people that knew Ivan. Rico Browning was great, and Big John, who worked with Ivan for a long time, and Jordan Klein, who's a genius, who worked with him. You know, these were the main guys that did the underwater stuff. And then John Sayles is a big-time Hollywood screenwriter, great filmmaker. And I spoke with him, and then he hooked me up with Joe Dante, and it just sort of all, you know, came into play. All these people were so excited to talk about Ivan, and I think what was interesting is that I didn't find anybody to say a bad thing about Ivan Torres. Now, that's almost unheard of, because even before you turn a tape recorder on or before something begins, or even still, there's always something somebody will say, you know, like, oh, this guy was abrasive, or this guy was, you know, this way or that way, and Ivan Torres was just another type of person, another type of human being, that everybody remembered fondly and did so many incredible things that I couldn't get people to shut up. I was running out of tape, and, you know, and they just loved him, and they were excited about the idea of being a part of something and helping to immortalize, you know, the legendary Ivan Torres.
Now, what was your process? How did you figure out what comes first, what comes next, and how did you get that footage that you interspersed in between the stories?
Well, since I had a background, I have a background as a journalist, I put together a whole series of basic questions. So, you know, the typical stuff that you would ask anybody. How did you meet Ivan Torres? You know, how long did you know him? Was it just a professional relationship? Was it also a personal relationship? And so you had the basic foundation, and then from there, you figured out, well, how did people really know Ivan Torres? And then you'd ask them specific questions. For example, people that worked for Ivan as a set designer or as a production manager, I could ask them anything about working with Ivan on a set, but never in a million years would I ask, you know, well, what'd you think about Ivan's wife or whatever, because how would they know? you know, certain things unless she showed up on the set. And so the main process was to put together the questions and then to contact all of the people and set up the schedules. Now, I go back and forth to L.A. and to New York and to Miami, but I don't want to spend 3 or 4 weeks hanging out at a hotel or in some room spreading things out. So I tried to arrange as many people as possible over the course of a week, you know, or even over the course of a day. I would sometimes interview 2 or 3 people in a day. I would never want to shut somebody up, but I knew, you know, after 4 hours I was out of there. And, you know, or you last about an hour or so. So that was the main thing. Finding money is never a thrill. You can never get enough money to do anything. And so that wasn't easy. I was a little bit surprised that of all the people that I met who lived in beautiful homes and made a pretty good living because of Ivan Tors, not a single person said, can I invest in your movie or do you need any money? I mean, not one person. Nobody offered a penny. You know, the financing came from other people who just liked the idea and wanted to be a part of something creative and loved the idea of, you know, grew up with Flipper and Sea Hunt and Gentle Ben and just wanted to be a part of this. But, yeah, nobody knew Ivan living in their big mansions. Thanks to Ivan. Nobody offered me 10 cents. So that was a little surprising.
What would you do differently if you were to do the whole thing again?
Well, I probably would have tried to start sooner, since so many people, you know, were dying. That would have helped. What would I have done? You know, there's so much footage to get, and that's not easy either, because somebody like Ivan, everybody knows Flipper, everybody knows Gentle Ben, everybody knows Sea Hunt, but he created so many films and TV shows that it was so difficult to get a lot of that stuff because it's just not out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really great stuff. Doctari was a huge, huge success. And I think maybe last week it finally came out on DVD. You know, last week.
Wow.
You know, I edited this thing, you know, over the course of the summertime. And actually I had 2 wonderful editors that worked with me. One was a friend from high school, Lenny Rabinowitz, who was from South Florida. And he helped pull together a lot, you know, really great material. And then I have another friend named Jennifer in New York City, and what she did was amazing. You see, what would I have done differently? That's a great question. I think one thing I would have done is my friend Jennifer in New York did a beautiful job with the videography of John Sayles and Joe Franklin, but she was based out of New York. I wish I would have had more money to take her with me to different places in the United States, like Los Angeles and Miami. So she and her friend Christina, who also was part of the production crew in New York, I wish I would have had I wish I would have kept the same crew throughout the production.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
Sometimes I would hire somebody who I didn't know, you know, but I just needed somebody. I needed somebody for a particular Tuesday in, you know, in LA or somewhere else. And I had to hire somebody, you know, from a referral. A referral is always good. But there were times where things they just didn't do things right. And I wish I would have just stuck with a great crew, but it just didn't happen. So next time I think that's what I would do. It's worth the money. It's worth the extra effort. Have a solid team with you from the beginning all the way through to the end. Because I had a lot of
videographers
on this, you know. But it was done out of necessity. You know, there wasn't enough money in the budget to fly Jennifer all over the place and put her up in hotels and feed her, which she would have deserved, like any other crew. But it just wasn't there, so I did the best I could. And look, other people did a great job, but there's a lot of footage that I couldn't even use because the people just did such a horrendous job, which is a shame.
Mm.
We actually have
a few people that are trying to call in, but I think that today I'm just going to leave it all up to you to talk. I'm not going to take any callers today because I just, you know, you have so much great information. But we may have to do another show where we just have a call-in show because obviously you're generating a lot of interest today, which is great.
Okay.
Tell people where they can see your film. Is it going to be in more festivals or can they get it anywhere?
Yeah, well, what I did first and foremost is I wanted it to have its premiere in South Florida. That was very important to me. I thought, this is about Ivan Tors. who had such an impact on the South Florida film industry, that how could I possibly let it screen first in, let's say, Breckenridge or, you know, Colorado or someplace else. So I submitted a copy to the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, but the copy I submitted at the time in August wasn't something I was 100% proud of. We were still doing editing, and Jennifer was still doing such a great job. So I wrote a very long and detailed letter to Gregory Von Hausch and to Bonnie, who, you know, the top echelon there at the festival. And I told them, I said, look, here's what I've got so far. And I've interviewed Larry King and Joe Dante and John Sayles and Rance Howard and Clint Howard and all these other luminaries. So take a look at it so you could see that I did do what I said I was going to do, but we're doing more. And I know the festival is in October, and I know that I submitted it on the very last day, the last deadline. Hmm. You know, they have three or four deadlines, the last one, and I wrote a very nice letter, and I said, look, if there's any way you can take a look at this, and I understand that you'll probably love the subject matter, and just if you have confidence in me, that over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going to put together, it's going to be even better than it is now. And there was nothing wrong with the version. It was pretty cool, but I knew things that I wanted to do that I thought would really make it. And so I got an email from Gregory Von Hausch inviting me to the festival, saying that the film got accepted. And something like that is easily one of the best days of my life. I mean, how can you go wrong? Work so hard on something. And to know somebody like Greg, you know, and Bonnie, who see so many films, so many, and they say no all the time. They have to say no. They can't take every film. And for them to have watched it, to have appreciated it, and to have you know, confidence in me that it would be even better, and to accept it, that was just great. And so I was happy to go to the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival and to promote it as best I can. And they even went as far as to add me to FLIF On Location, where they went to the Bahamas for the first time. And out of, I think, 200 films, maybe, they selected about 10 to take to the Bahamas, and The Legend of Ivan Tors was one of them, which was great. And what was great about that is Ivan Tors filmed Flipper, a great deal of Flipper, in the Bahamas, so there was that connection. And also... Ivan Tors won a special Academy Award for the movie Thunderball with James Bond because Ivan Tors, his team, was responsible for all the underwater fighting and the sharks and all that other great stuff. At the time, in 1965, if you didn't have Ivan Tors, there really wasn't anybody, you know, or, you know, there were a few people in there, but he was the best of the best. And if you're a Cubby Broccoli, you know, you're going to have James Bond and money. Doesn't matter, you know, who are you going to hire? You know, they considered hiring Jacques Cousteau. You know, Jacques Cousteau, I guess, would have been nice to film some sharks swimming around. But if you really want fighting and drama and props and all this other amazing stuff, Ivan Tors and his team were the best of the best.
Do you have a website that people can check out more about you or about the film?
No.
Not yet.
No, not yet. We were promoting it on, you know, Facebook for a while, but we're going to put together a website probably in about a week or two, and all people really have to do is go on Google and type up Ivan Tors, and it'll come up. But yeah, we're entering more film festivals, and I'm also keeping my word. I actually don't have a copy of the film myself. I took my last so nobody who participated in the film even has a copy of it. I sent my master to a place 10 days ago to have copies made. And I mean, I have backups, obviously, of course, but I just ordered a bunch, and in about 10 days, I'm going to be sending them out to all the people who participated in front of and behind the camera. Because I'll tell you a quick story about Larry King.
We're running out of time. So.
Well, I'm just saying, Larry King and a few other people, they said to me, when the film is done, please send me a DVD. I want to do what I can to help you out and to get as many people as possible to watch this. And so then we're going to enter some more film festivals. But obviously, we want to be respectful to Larry King and Joe Dante and all these other people.
Right.
have them see.
And you're, you have a new project that you're working on now where you're going to be talking about the Dakota building, right, in New York?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
The Dakota.
So you're moving on to the next thing already.
Okay. The Dakota, well, I have a lot of things I do at one time. It wouldn't make sense. I'm not like, you know, when you're 20 years old and you get a job at a factory in Detroit and you stay there your whole life. I've never understood that way of thinking. I always have a lot of things going on. But the Dakota apartment building, I've actually been working on that for a little bit over a year. And the building was built in 1885, and it's still standing, which that in itself is amazing. In New York City, they tear everything down. And for this incredible thing to still be there, and it's most famous for two reasons. One, for Rosemary's Baby, even though it wasn't shot there, you're not allowed to film inside the Dakota. You know, people do live there. It's a home. But they filmed the exterior there, and it took place there. The second reason it's famous is because it's where John Lennon lived and was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me that there's an incredibly beautiful building of major historical and social significance, and the only reason people go and look at it is because John Lennon got shot there. And it's not right. And it's not fair, and so I thought I would go ahead and put together a project. And the people that have lived there and still live there, Lauren Bacall, Roberta Flack, Gilda Radner used to live there, Connie Chung, Yoko Ono still lives there, Rex Reed lives there, just amazing. Boris Karloff, Steinway from Steinway Pianos, he was one of the first residents to live in the Dakota. It just has an amazing, rich, incredible history. And it's a story of New York. It's a story of the Upper West Side, which there was no Upper West Side. The reason it's called the Dakota is because it was so far north from anything else in Manhattan that people said, you may as well have built it in North Dakota. And that's how it got its name. And it's a beautiful building with a great history, and I'd appreciate it if, you know, my goal is for people to pass by and look at the building and understand the history of it and the architecture of it, and not just, you know, oh, this is where John Lennon got killed. You know, I don't think John Lennon would want that. You know, stop here and take photographs of where I got shot. It's, you know, I was in Miami yesterday, and people take pictures in front of where Versace got murdered.
Right.
You know, and most people probably didn't know who Versace was until he got shot. You know, and now all of a sudden people want pictures on the bloody steps, and it's sad. And you know, I guess it's kind of, if I had to visit a therapist and he wrote a book about me, there's probably some kind of theme in there. I don't like that Ivan Tors had such major accomplishments and was forgotten, and I don't like the idea that here's this major, beautiful building on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and it's not, people just walk by and don't pay attention to what it is and what it was and how it got there and why it still exists, or if they do, oh, look, it's where John Lennon got shot. It just doesn't. So I feel like I've got some little mission. Let me go in there and explain, you know, what this building's all about.
So if people want to kind of find out more about you, I guess they can Google your name, Scott Cardinal, and just Google the Legend of Ivan Tors, and hopefully once the Dakota Project gets done, I'm not sure what you're going to call that, but hopefully that will pop up as well, and they can find out more about what you're doing. You're on Facebook, right?
Yeah, exactly. I actually try to stay under the radar. Yeah, I try to stay under the radar. The FBI is on your trail. But, actually, I think it's just because I'm so used to it. Like I said, since I was 17, I've been writing under pseudonyms, and I've written novels, I've written screenplays, I've written so many different things and worked on many different projects that I've always used. I've never been into promoting myself and shining a light on me. It's not a comfortable thing for me. I'd rather just stay busy and do the projects I want to do. I don't think I'm that important. You know, nobody needs to pat me on the back or shake my hand or tell me anything. I'd rather they just watch the documentary or read the book and not really associate me with it. But yeah, and see, now you're hurting my feelings. You make me feel like I should have a website promoting myself like crazy. I got
to
stop working
on it. Not everyone has to have a big promotion like I do.
Yeah, now you're giving me some pride.
But that's my job. That's what I do is I promote other people. So that's what I like to do is promote people like you that are kind of under the radar, and people don't know that there's people like you out there doing these great projects. So that's why I do a show like this, that I can kind of say, hey, look at this, look what he's doing, you know, because there are a lot of people that don't like to promote themselves. And I actually have a hard time sometimes on some of my projects promoting myself, too. So I totally understand.
Yeah, but, well, you're awesome. Yeah.
What?
You're awesome.
What did
you
say?
I mean, it was a pleasure to meet when we first met. And I'm really convinced, I'm not kidding about this, I think with the exception of the Queen of England, you might be the most photographed woman on Earth. You know, right? There's always
you
a picture
know.
Of you. Yeah, you're always there. So I think you might get a letter from Buckingham Palace sometime soon saying you need to slow down, Rachel. There's too many photographs of you out there, and you're going to pass the Queen of England by.
That's
so
right.
We don't want that. Yeah, you've already passed Madonna and Lady Gaga by. I think the Queen of England is your next challenge. So that's four. I think you're about four or five photographs behind her.
Well, thanks for coming on the show today.
I was happy to.
And we're running out of time already, but thanks for coming on, and hopefully people will see The Legend of Ivan Tors out there in the film festivals.
Yeah, hopefully.
Thanks,
and then I'll thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye. Okay, so again, for those of you that are holding on the line, I haven't had time today to take callers, but I really appreciate you guys calling in, and I hope that you'll tune into some of my other shows. A lot of times when I talk to these directors, they have so much to say, and especially with Scott Cardinal. When I met him, I mean, he talked a blue streak. He is so passionate about Ivan Tors, so I just had to bring him on the show. The minute I met him, I knew that I had to write a review about him. In fact, there's a review of the movie up on my website, which is independentstreak.ning.com, independentstreak.ning, N-I-N-G.com. So you can check out that if you want to see the review that I did about The Legend of Ivan Tors. Also, I have a lot of other events and other reviews and different things up on the website as well. And that's always changing, so you want to check back to the website. And I will be creating a new site soon, which I will be letting you guys know on my show. Now, this particular show, as you can see, if you've been tuning in, is a bit random. I don't have a set time for this show, so you have to check back on the blogtalkradio.com/IndieStreak and see, you know, what's upcoming, because I will be interviewing other directors and producers and other people in the industry. In the meantime, you can also check out my other show, which is called Basics of the Biz. On that show, it's just me talking about tips for the actors out there, since I'm also an actor and producer and done a lot of other things within the industry. So I have a ton of shows I've done that are archived on the Basics of the Biz under Indie Streak, so you can listen to any of those at any time. Also, I have a book that I wrote, which is why I have the show called Basics of the Biz. I wrote a book called Basics of the Biz about the acting industry, and that's available on Amazon.com. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today, and unfortunately, Scott does not have a website that you can check out, but if you Google The Legend of Ivan Tors, you could find out more about the project, but I think Scott would actually prefer if you just find out more about the man, Ivan Tors, to the man that really inspired Scott, and that he feels needs more more showcase out there in the world, because he did do such great projects. It's amazing the amount of stuff that he did. When I watched the documentary, I was amazed at what he has done. But anyway, guys, we're running out of time, but do tune in next time to the show. Like I said, just look on the Indie Streak here on Blog Talk Radio and see what's coming up next. I will talk to you then. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.